Have you ever felt confused, frustrated, or even crazy after an interaction with someone? Found yourself wondering why you're suddenly defending yourself when you were the one with a legitimate complaint? You may have encountered a manipulator, a wolf in sheep's clothing. In his groundbreaking book, In Sheep's Clothing, clinical psychologist Dr. George Simon Jr. reveals the hidden mechanics of manipulation that leave victims feeling powerless and doubting their own sanity. This work has transformed countless lives since its publication, becoming required reading in many psychology programs and law enforcement training courses. Celebrities like Oprah Winfrey have praised its insights, and its principles have influenced modern therapeutic approaches to character disorders. Drawing from decades of clinical experience, Simon challenges traditional psychological assumptions about human behavior, offering a revolutionary framework for understanding the manipulators who walk among us, not as insecure individuals driven by fear, but as calculated fighters using covert aggression to get exactly what they want. We're fighting more often than we realize. From the toddler struggling over a toy to the politician jockeying for position, humans constantly engage in battles for advantage, resources, and control. This fighting instinct is natural. It's how we survive and advance ourselves. But there's a crucial distinction between healthy assertiveness and manipulation. When someone fights openly and fairly for legitimate needs while respecting others, that's healthy assertiveness. When they fight unnecessarily or with little regard for others, that's aggression. And when they conceal their aggressive intentions behind a facade of innocence, victimhood, or even virtue, that's covert aggression, the primary vehicle for manipulation. Consider these common scenarios. A husband demands his daughter make all A's, but when his wife objects, he responds, "Shouldn't any good parent want their child to succeed?" She ends up feeling like the unreasonable one. Or a teenage daughter threatens to run away whenever her mother tries to discipline her, making mom question whether enforcing rules is worth the risk of harming her daughter emotionally. What's happening in these interactions? The manipulator is fighting for position or advantage, but in ways that are difficult to detect. The victims sense they're being maneuvered, but can't point to clear evidence. They feel defensive without seeing proof they're in a fight. Without objective evidence to support their hunches, they end up doubting themselves. This is precisely what makes manipulation so effective and so maddening. The aggression isn't obvious. The manipulator uses powerful deception techniques. Everyone has exploitable weaknesses, and our conventional beliefs about human nature make us hesitate to judge others harshly. Traditional psychology, developed during the repressive Victorian era, focused on neurosis, excessive inhibition of basic instincts. But today's social climate is far more permissive. Many problems now stem from deficient self-restraint rather than excessive inhibition, what Simon calls character disturbance. Therapists trained in neurosis theory often misframe manipulative behavior, seeing aggressive fighters as fearful runners, when in fact they're calculated combatants. To effectively deal with manipulators, we must first understand their true character. Personality, our unique way of perceiving and interacting with the world, includes both innate temperament and learned behaviors. Character specifically refers to how we fulfill social responsibilities and conduct ourselves with others. People of sound character temper their instinctual drives and discipline their aggressive tendencies for the greater social good. When facing obstacles, we can either retreat or challenge them directly. Submissive personalities habitually retreat from conflicts, doubting their abilities. Aggressive personalities, by contrast, are obsessed with winning, forcefully removing barriers to what they want, seeking power ambitiously, and using it unscrupulously. Neurotic personalities experience excessive anxiety from conflicts between their instincts and conscience. They suffer from too much conscience. Character-disordered personalities lack self-restraint. They have too little conscience. As mental health professionals often say, if someone makes themselves miserable, they're probably neurotic. If they make everyone else miserable, they're probably character disordered. Covert aggressive personalities are fighters who use subtle, underhanded methods. They possess key attributes: unwavering determination to win, quest for power and dominance, deceptive charm and civility, unscrupulous fighting tactics, impaired consciences, and exploitative relationships. Their development typically involves learning failures. They never learned when fighting is necessary, how to concede temporarily for long-term gain, how to fight fairly, how to admit defeat, how to overcome selfishness, or how to respect others' vulnerabilities. These manipulators often gravitate toward politics, law enforcement, and religion, fields offering power under the guise of service. The more skilled a covert aggressive is at manipulation, the easier it becomes for them to rise to positions of substantial influence. The primary characteristic of covert aggressive personalities is their valuing winning above all else. They're determined, cunning, and sometimes ruthless in pursuit of their goals, using various manipulative tactics not only to get what they want, but also to avoid seeing themselves or being seen by others as they truly are. Consider Joe Blake, whose daughter Lisa was experiencing nightmares and declining school performance. While his wife, Mary, suggested Lisa might simply be under pressure, Joe positioned himself as the more concerned parent who would leave no stone unturned. When Lisa first brought home B's, Joe immediately took action, presenting himself as the conscientious father while subtly making Mary feel negligent for not sharing his level of concern. Or take James, a minister who moved his reluctant family from a cozy countryside church to a prestigious city congregation, a known stepping stone to the church elders. While claiming to follow God's will and finding joy in service, he neglected his family entirely. His wife Jean felt guilty questioning his dedication, especially when James invoked divine purpose to justify his choices. When rumors of family problems threatened his elder council prospects, James suddenly arranged family time, not from genuine care, but to protect his ambitions. James uses religious service as cover for his ambition for prestige and power. Unlike someone of sound character who balances self-interest with others' needs, James neglects his family while claiming to minister to others. His true agenda is revealed when he suddenly makes time for his wife only after learning that family problems might jeopardize his elder council seat, showing his power ambition remains unchanged, merely requiring a different tactical approach. James exploits Jean's selfless nature and family background of toxic shame to manipulate her. When she requests more family time, he uses guilt-tripping and subtle shaming to make her feel selfish. Jean struggles to reconcile her intuition about his neglect with his apparent devotion to ministry. James abuses his position as a religious leader to silence her resistance, demonstrating how his character flaws, not power itself, drive his unscrupulous pursuit and abuse of authority. Covert aggressive personalities excel at deception and seduction, showing you what you want to see while concealing their true nature. They charm and manipulate their way through relationships and organizations, often causing significant damage before their true character is revealed. Al charmed everyone with his charisma and apparent appreciation for employees, boosting sales and morale. Despite initial unease, Don grew to trust Al after receiving compliments and a certificate of commendation. When rumors circulated about a new hire, Al reassured Don his job was secure, only to later bring in Jeff, forcing Don to split his client accounts. Al's deception came through omission rather than outright lies, putting Don in an impossible position: start over at an advanced age or take early retirement. Betty positioned herself as indispensable through hard work and willingness to take on special tasks. Despite her apparent dedication, colleagues felt uneasy around her, sensing danger in crossing her, though unable to point to specific cruelties. When Jack joined as executive assistant, Betty outwardly supported him while secretly undermining him, telling the boss his ideas were underdeveloped and assuring coworkers she would keep the boss informed. As Jack gained popularity, Betty strategically planted doubts about him, including insinuations about his sexual orientation, knowing the boss's prejudices. Jack, increasingly isolated, relied on Betty for information until he eventually left, exactly as she had planned. Betty exemplifies the crucial distinction between reactive and predatory aggression. While reactive aggression is an emotional response to threats, like a cornered cat arching its back with emotions on display, predatory aggression is calculated and deliberate. The predatory aggressor, like a cat stalking a mouse, remains calm, quiet, and concealed until ready to strike. Betty wasn't motivated by fear, but by desire for power and status. She approached Jack's removal with cunning precision, staying low to the ground and striking without warning. This distinction explains why sending predatory aggressors to anger management classes misunderstands their fundamental motivation. They aren't acting from fear or anger, but from calculated desire. Aggressive personalities resist constraints on their behavior, fighting against the socialization process that would install internal brakes. They detest submission to higher authority, resulting in significantly impaired consciences. Covert aggressives uniquely maintain appearances while violating the spirit of moral principles. They may show restraint when scrutinized, but reveal their true character when they believe they're immune from detection. Mary Jane, desperate after her husband left her, took a job with Mr. Jackson, who initially seemed supportive despite her lack of experience. Over time, as her workload increased without compensation, she discovered his true motives. When confronting him about a raise, he revealed his expectation of sexual favors in exchange for advancement, pointing out how other women had been cooperative. Though disgusted, Mary Jane felt trapped by her financial situation and need for a reference. Mr. Jackson expertly identifies and exploits vulnerability, keeping victims in one-down positions. He selectively chooses associates and relishes power over others. How a person uses power reveals their true character, as demonstrated by Mr. Jackson, who appeared generous but actually preyed on Mary Jane's desperation, confident he wouldn't face consequences. Though Mr. Jackson shows callous disregard for others' rights and needs, he's not technically antisocial or sociopathic. He breaks no major laws and contributes to society through his business. His conscience is clearly impaired, but not entirely absent. He exemplifies the channeled aggressive and covert aggressive personality, maintaining social respectability while privately exploiting others. Mr. Jackson's evil isn't his aggression itself. Some of his channeled aggression positively contributes to his business success. Rather, it's his refusal to fully own and responsibly restrain his aggressive tendencies. He knows how to maintain appearances and protect himself if caught, but has never committed to the hard work of disciplining his aggression. His evil lies not in being aggressive, but in failing to accept the need to control it. Covert aggressives employ various tactics to maintain power imbalances in relationships. They expertly exploit others' emotional insecurities, often initially seducing partners with charm before revealing their true nature. By the time victims recognize the manipulation, they've typically invested too much emotionally to easily walk away. Janice initially feels guilty about leaving Bill, who strategically reinforces this by subtly communicating his deterioration without directly blaming her. When hospitalized for an overdose, Bill masterfully plays the victim, making Janice feel selfish for leaving him. Despite her initial anger, Janice doesn't recognize the manipulation and returns to him. Bill expertly combines victim playing with guilt-tripping techniques while externalizing blame for his behavior onto Janice and alcohol. Their relationship demonstrates the slot machine syndrome, where victims stay in abusive relationships hoping for occasional small rewards despite massive emotional investment. This syndrome explains why victims remain in abusive relationships despite wanting to leave. Four factors create this trap: the appeal of a potential jackpot for minimal initial investment, a reinforcement schedule requiring continued responding, occasional small rewards, cherries, suggesting larger payoffs are possible, and the psychological difficulty of abandoning substantial emotional investment. In Janice's case, Bill's early attentiveness and approval were highly valued. Though these rewards became increasingly rare and required greater investment, she continued seeking those small payoffs. The syndrome creates an illusion of control while the victim is exploited, making it nearly impossible to walk away from years of emotional investment without feeling ashamed. Unlike true codependency, Bill is an emotionally independent aggressor who fights to maintain power and control, viewing Janice as his possession rather than someone he genuinely needs. In abusive relationships like Bill and Janice's, the aggressor doesn't fight to keep someone they love or need, they fight to maintain dominance and power. Bill hates losing control, which is why he aggressively prevents Janice from leaving. As a disordered character, he views her as a possession without the right to independence or happiness elsewhere. While professionals have extensively studied how children's fears and insecurities shape personality development, they've largely ignored how children learn to channel aggressive instincts. Children naturally fight for what they want, initially, openly, and physically. Most learn to moderate overt aggression through parental discipline and social sanctions, discovering instead how to manipulate others by pressing emotional buttons. Jenny visits a therapist alone, worried about her daughter Amanda's low self-esteem. She describes how Amanda responded to having privileges revoked for not turning in homework by sobbing dramatically, claiming everyone hated her, and refusing to speak until Jenny relented. Though Amanda previously bullied her younger brother Joey and was suspended for fighting, Jenny believes Amanda's behavior has improved now that she no longer has a size advantage. Though Amanda no longer has the physical size advantage she once used to bully others, she hasn't stopped being a fighter and a bully. She's simply changed tactics. She has identified her mother's weaknesses and knows exactly how to manipulate Jenny into submission. Jenny recognizes aggression when it's direct and physical, but fails to see Amanda's covert aggression, inadvertently enabling her daughter's manipulative behavior. Jenny incorrectly searches for underlying causes of Amanda's behavior, assuming some fear or insecurity must be driving it, just as she did with her ex-husband's abuse. While Amanda may have unresolved issues about her parents' divorce, these aren't the real problem. Amanda's personality has become the problem. She's developed a lifestyle of fighting underhandedly, using guilt-tripping, playing the victim, blaming others, and making veiled threats to get her way. Though Jenny wants to help Amanda, her daughter neither needs nor seeks help. She requires correction. Jenny is the actual victim needing assistance. Traditional therapeutic approaches fail with disturbed characters like Amanda because she doesn't need insight into unconscious fears or improved self-esteem. She needs cognitive behavioral therapy to correct her distorted thinking, limit setting, and confrontation about her covertly aggressive conduct. Contrary to Jenny's assumption that Amanda suffers from low self-esteem, self-esteem isn't unipolar. One can have too much as easily as too little. Character-disordered individuals who've gained inordinate power often overly esteem themselves rather than compensating for insecurity. Amanda's confidence in her ability to dominate at home and school reflects this inflated self-image. While traditional psychology views behaviors like denial as unconscious defense mechanisms protecting against emotional pain, this perspective fails with character-disturbed individuals. When such people engage in these behaviors, they aren't primarily defending against guilt or shame, but consciously employing tactics to manipulate others and resist social norms. Manipulators have refined a sophisticated arsenal of techniques to control others while maintaining plausible deniability. Here are the most common tactics. Minimization combines denial with rationalization, where aggressors downplay the harmfulness of their behavior, making mountains into molehills. They frequently use the words just and only to manipulate others' impressions. Lying goes beyond simple falsehoods to include omission, withholding crucial facts, and distortion, reciting true facts while leaving out essential context. Particularly effective is deliberate vagueness, carefully crafting stories that give the impression of transparency while omitting critical details. Denial isn't a defensive protection from unbearable pain, but a tactical maneuver to make others back down or feel guilty for confronting them. James, the minister's, denial of his ruthless ambition was massive until his seat on the Elders' Council was threatened. Then he suddenly found time for his family. Selective inattention involves actively ignoring warnings, pleas, or wishes that might distract from their agenda. This "I don't want to hear it" behavior resists submission to others' guidance. Rationalization provides excuses for inappropriate behavior that sound just plausible enough for conscientious people to accept. This powerful tactic not only quiets any qualms of conscience the aggressor might have, but keeps others from interfering. Diversion works like a magician's misdirection, redirecting attention to hide manipulative intentions. When confronted about important issues, manipulators change the subject or dodge questions, leaving victims wondering how the conversation shifted topics. Covert intimidation uses veiled implications to keep victims anxious and in a one-down position. Rather than making overt threats, manipulators use subtle reminders of potential consequences while maintaining plausible deniability. Guilt-tripping exploits the conscientiousness of victims, using it to keep them anxious, self-doubting, and submissive. The more conscientious the victim, the more effective guilt becomes. Shaming employs subtle sarcasm and put-downs to increase fear and self-doubt in others, making them feel inadequate and therefore more likely to defer to the aggressor. Playing the victim involves portraying oneself as suffering to evoke compassion and gain advantage. Covert aggressives understand that caring personalities can't bear to see others in distress, so they manufacture suffering to manipulate them. Vilifying the victim makes it appear the aggressor is merely defending against the victim's aggression. It puts victims on the defensive while masking the aggressor's intentions. Playing the servant role disguises self-serving agendas as service to noble causes. By pretending to work hard for others, covert aggressives conceal their ambition and quest for dominance. Seduction involves charming, praising, flattering, and overtly supporting others to lower their defenses and gain their trust and loyalty. Manipulators keenly understand that emotionally needy people crave approval, reassurance, and feeling valued. Projecting blame shifts responsibility for inappropriate behavior onto others or external circumstances. Bill exemplifies this by suggesting he only drinks when feeling unsupported by Janice and only becomes abusive when drinking, effectively blaming both Janice and alcohol. Feigning innocence or confusion involves manipulators convincing victims that any harm was unintentional or denying wrongdoing entirely. This tactic is designed to make victims question their judgment or sanity. Brandishing anger uses calculated displays of rage as tools of intimidation. Unlike genuine emotional responses, these displays are tactical performances designed to shock others into submission. The fundamental rule of human engagement is that the aggressor sets the rules. To avoid being victimized, one must quickly redefine the terms of engagement by establishing a more favorable balance of power. Effective protection against manipulation requires being free of harmful misconceptions, accurately assessing others' character, maintaining high self-awareness about personal vulnerabilities, recognizing manipulation tactics, and avoiding unwinnable battles. One significant misconception that makes us vulnerable to manipulation is the belief that everyone thinks and behaves similarly. Covertly aggressive people differ fundamentally from average functional neurotics. They don't share the same worldview, code of conduct, or motivations. Avoiding victimization requires identifying people with aggressive and covertly aggressive personality traits. If someone always pushes to have their way, must win, seeks the upper hand, or won't take no for an answer, they likely have an aggressive personality. Similarly, those who rarely give straight answers, make excuses for hurtful actions, try to induce guilt, or use manipulation tactics are demonstrating covert aggression. Manipulators gain leverage by understanding their victims' vulnerabilities. Self-knowledge provides counter-leverage in these relationships. Key vulnerabilities to examine include naivete, difficulty accepting others' cunning or ruthlessness, over-conscientiousness, being harder on yourself than others, low self-confidence, chronic self-doubt, over-intellectualization, trying too hard to understand manipulators' motives rather than protecting yourself, and emotional dependency, submissive traits that attract aggressive personalities. People frequently victimized by manipulators often become too confused, frustrated, and depressed to think clearly. This depression stems from persistently fighting unwinnable battles, particularly trying to change the manipulator. Progress in conflicts with aggressive personalities only happens when you invest time and energy where you have unquestionable power, your own behavior. Practical strategies for dealing with manipulators include 1. Set personal limits on what behaviors you'll tolerate before taking counteraction or disengaging. 2. Make direct requests using I statements, avoiding generalities, and being specific about what you want. 3. Accept only direct responses and insist on clear answers to straightforward questions. 4. Stay focused in the present moment and don't let diversionary tactics steer you away from the problem behavior. 5. Keep responsibility on the aggressor when confronting inappropriate behavior, regardless of their attempts to shift blame. 6. Avoid sarcasm, hostility, and put-downs when confronting manipulators, as these give them excuses to counterattack. 7. Avoid making threats and instead take action when boundaries are crossed. 8. Act quickly at the first sign of manipulation, as aggressive personalities lack internal brakes. 9. Speak for yourself using I statements rather than hiding behind others' needs. 10. Make reasonable agreements that are appropriate, reliable, verifiable, and enforceable. 11. Be prepared for consequences and anticipate potential retaliation when setting boundaries. And 12. Be honest with yourself about your own needs, desires, and vulnerabilities. Helen's story illustrates these principles in action. After 15 years with her manipulative husband, Matt, she decided to separate as part of a plan to pursue personal goals without daily interference. She set clear personal limits, explaining what needed to change for their relationship to continue, creating a win-win scenario where she'd remain if he demonstrated genuine change through long-term therapy. With newfound confidence, Helen was prepared to hold her ground against his inevitable testing. Human aggressive tendencies aren't inherently evil. They were essential for survival throughout most of evolutionary history. Though civilization reduced the need for aggression, it remains deeply ingrained in our nature. Our political, economic, and cultural environments significantly influence how we express this aggression. To create a more principled society, we must better teach children to manage their aggression. Unlike Freud's era, when emotional health focused on overcoming fears, today's challenge is helping children channel aggressive tendencies responsibly. Parents must teach children when fighting is appropriate, demonstrate alternatives to fighting, and help them distinguish between assertiveness and aggressiveness, bending the will without breaking the spirit. Though the drive for power and dominance exists in everyone, growing numbers of character-disordered individuals seek these ends without doing the necessary work. We've become a nation of undisciplined fighters pursuing individual power rather than mutual advancement. As pathological neuroses have disappeared and character disturbance has become commonplace, functional-level neurotics carry an increasing social burden, while character-disordered individuals shirk responsibility. Character building is the lifelong process of instilling self-discipline and developing capacities to live responsibly, do productive work, and love. As Scott Peck notes, loving isn't a feeling, but a behavior, precisely what the two great commandments urge us to commit to. Though we begin life constrained by our natural endowments and upbringing, we cannot remain victims forever. Everyone must eventually come to terms with themselves. Knowing oneself, judging one's strengths and weaknesses fairly, and mastering one's basic instincts are life's greatest challenges. True integrity comes only through self-awakening, honestly facing all aspects of one's character without deceit or denial. Only then can one freely choose to take up the burden of self-discipline for both self and others. This free choice to carry this cross defines love and opens the door to a higher plane of existence. In the end, the most powerful defense against manipulation is not just recognizing the wolves in sheep's clothing who walk among us, but developing the strength of character to stand firm in our own truth, even when faced with the most cunning attempts to make us doubt ourselves.